Alex in Lisburn. Morning to you, Alex.
Morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
So we're talking about health and is there extra money? This time last year, we were discussing welfare, and we wasted something like 100 million on the refusal of Sinn Féin to accept the reality of welfare changes. They stuck their heads in the sand and said we lost millions. We're talking about the renewable energy scheme. It pops up in the press every now and again now. It's going to cost us hundreds of millions of pounds because it wasn't run properly. And so we have the ridiculous situation where we're told it's the fault of the civil servants. It's not the fault of the ministers in charge. One of the ministers in charge is actually the First Minister, Arlene Foster.
Well, let's...
So, and those parties went for re-election in May. 400,000 people on the health waiting list. And yet people came out and voted for them.
No, not 400,000 people on the waiting list. The latest figures that we have for people on the waiting list, I think, I'm trying to remember this from last night, I think it's 220,000 people on the waiting list. Let's again step back from this and think then bigger picture. What I'm talking about is short-term waiting lists, okay? And that's,
yep,
that's very much in the public interest, because if you're on a waiting list right now, you want to hear what the short-term solution is if you're sitting waiting, and that's the bottom line. However, let's actually then think big picture for a second or two about what this executive is doing. So, many governments in the past have shied away from publicly saying that they're going to centralise acute services, the likes of if you take a stroke, you take a heart attack, that they will say, no, we're not going to provide those services all over the country in all different hospitals, which is quite a populist thing to do. What this government is doing is saying, no, even if it is politically awkward for us to say it out loud, actually, your chance of surviving is heightened and is a lot greater, according to the experts, if there are specialist services in fewer hospitals, because basically those surgeons are doing those type of operations every day of the week. So even if it's not populist, yes, we will centralise hospital services. And they've gone a stage further than that. They've said that they want the medical professionals to drive that agenda, to drive what should happen. Many people, I've heard them yesterday say, that's a very brave thing for government to do. Then what is Michelle O'Neill doing? Something that John Compton, former head of the Health and Social Care Board, sat in front of us here yesterday and said that he welcomed the minister's vision. He thought it was a good thing. And he pointed out to the actions and the targets that the minister is targeting herself to deliver. Now, this isn't waiting lists, you see, but there are other stuff. By March 27 of next year, there will be increased doctor training places. There will be investment in practice-based pharmacists. And you think to yourself, well, why is that important? One in ten, we learnt from John Compton yesterday, of admissions to hospital from elderly people is essentially pharma, as he described it, related. In other words, elderly people aren't taking the right amount of medication and they're getting mixed up. They're certainly not taking the right medication. And one in ten admissions to hospital are for elderly people are because of that. So this minister is delivering on that. March 2017 next year, more investment in practice-based pharmacists. She's going to ensure that every doctor practice by March 2017 next year has a named district nurse, has a health visitor, has a social worker to work with. They're going to make sure that there's further rollout of the Ask My GP system. By October next year, she's bringing forward proposals relating to the extension of placement options for looked-after children. By October next year, she, following the completion and evaluation of a pilot project, she is going to roll out access to the electronic care record to pharmacists. She's going to establish a pilot to test access to the record for independent optometrists. So there are lots and lots of things. You can go onto the department website and read the actions that the minister has said she is absolutely going to deliver on. So it would be completely wrong and unfair to say that there is not big picture action from government here. What we're trying to ask this morning is about the waiting lists. Now, there's a statement has apparently come in here just a moment ago. Sam McBride, you're still with us, correct?
Yes, I am.
This statement's just come in. I'll read it it's just coming from the Department of Finance, actually, who have told the Nolan Show the following. In June monitoring, an additional $67 million was allocated to health, bringing the total spend to some $200 million above the previous year. There was no resource money available for allocation in the October monitoring round, other than for pre-existing commitments, including for specialist drugs, another important issue for the health service. The money allocated for new buses and defibrillators is from the capital budget, which is completely separate. The executive is pledged to increase... So, by the way, and I have no problem doing it, I apologise for getting those mixed up, okay? I have no problem saying that. I'll read the rest of the statement. The executive is pledged to increase health spending by $1 billion over this assembly term. The solution to waiting lists is not to scramble for money during monitoring rounds, but fundamental transformation that makes this spending more effective. Sam?
Well, I think that certainly clarifies things to a certain extent. But, I mean, the $2.5 million, for instance, out of the resource budget, which was given to the City of Derry Airport, I mean, clearly the executive has prioritised that ahead of waiting lists. Now, there's a very legitimate political argument to be made there, but we're not hearing it being made. They're simply saying there was no money. Well, actually, there was money, and they chose to spend it on that ahead of waiting lists. It's absolutely right that waiting lists clearly are something that could consume a huge amount of the budget, and throwing money at it is not, as John Compton said yesterday, entirely the solution. But in the short term, to get them down, it clearly does resolve involve considerable funding.
It's interesting, this language from the Department of Finance. The solution to waiting lists is not to scramble for money during monitoring rounds. Well, actually, is that not part of the solution? Every year, was Simon Hamilton wrongly scrambling for money last year when he secured $40 million? Why wouldn't you? A monitoring round is all about fighting for money for your department. Why wouldn't you scramble for it, Sam?
Well, exactly. I think that this is probably another example of one of the consequences of a more joined up executive, where we're seeing departments rather than fighting each other, where the Department of Finance quite often was at loggerheads with other departments in monitoring rounds about whether they should get money or not. They're now actually putting out the message almost on behalf of the Department of Health. And also it would seem that the minister, who's a Sinn Féin minister as well as her colleague in the Department of Finance, she didn't actually request the money because perhaps they had a conversation and he said, look, you're just not going to get it.
And does that then mean, if we again read between the lines of this, the solution to waiting lists is not to scramble for money during monitoring rounds. The next monitoring round, so health has got nothing from the October monitoring round for waiting lists. The next monitoring round is January. Can we read from this that the Department of Finance don't think that the solution would be to scramble for money in January either? And if that's the case, then how many months worth of increased waiting lists are going to happen before the executive get extra money to tackle them?
Well, to a certain extent,
for the Department of Health,
the Department of Finance message seems to be at variance with what the Department of Health has been saying on the issue of waiting lists, because they've been saying we would love to have waiting lists lower, we don't think it's acceptable, but we have a limited budget with limited resources, and that means that we simply can't do it. So, I mean, it does seem that there's a bit of a contradictory message on that aspect of the statement.
If reform works, then living hand to mouth for, this is what they're essentially saying, if their big picture reform works, then living hand to mouth for funding and monitoring round money should be a thing of the past. In other words, the point is monitoring round, particularly in times of austerity, you can't be sure that any money's going to be there.
Well, that is true in the long term. Of course, there has to be reform, but I mean, given that there is a crisis at the moment, even if there is reform, there will need to be money to clear what is a very significant backlog. So it's not quite one or the other. To a certain extent, it's both.
Yeah. What I would like to do is I'd like to get some type of expert on. We're not going to get them now, but I'd like to get some type of expert on to look at the trend. When the waiting list went up last year because there was no extra money to tackle waiting lists, how much did it go up by each month? What's the incremental monthly increase in waiting lists? And why is that important? Because they're trying to tackle it. And the longer waiting lists increase, the bigger the job is, the bigger the task is to tackle it eventually. Fran Belfast, morning, Fran.
Stephen, I worked as an anaesthetic technician in the Ulster Hospital in Dundonald between 1983 and 1987. And I witnessed back then that the government of the day was talking about how the health service budgets were too big and had to rationalise and economise and streamline the health service. And what they actually did then was the biggest way to save £1 million was to close a ward. You save the wages for like 15 nurses and 5 doctors and all the ancillary and support staff that go along with it. So I think what we're suffering from today, this firefighting on the waiting list initiatives, is from the systemic underfunding of the health service for over the last 30 years. And as such, by closing wards, there's no capacity in the system so that when we have flu epidemics in the winter, those people are admitted to hospital, take up all the beds for the elective surgery. Yeah. Those surgeries are then postponed and cancelled. You have the same when people are going out in January and February in the ice and people slip and fall, broken hips, broken ankles, broken elbows. People are put into those hospital beds and that elective surgery is then postponed until...
But again, in the minister's big 10-year vision, yes, there is a plan for that. And the plan for that is that if you centralise the acute services, in other words, those heart and stroke services, and you centralise those, then in the other buildings around Northern Ireland, you can start to strategically look and plan what other services, be it emergency services or other services, that should be done. In other words, if they totally reform the health service and it's more efficient and they know what services are in different hospitals, then ultimately waiting lists will be improved because the system will be a lot more efficient. That's what they're trying to do. And they're basically saying it's a 10-year plan and they're asking for the public to go with them on it, to believe in it.
Stephen, I can accept that there is a case for the rationalisation of hospital and centralisation of hospital services if it can be proven that it's going to be in the benefit of the patients who are on the waiting list and the benefit of society in general, and that there are no job losses associated with that, but more to do with the redeployment of the health staff. But
well, statistically, the evidence is there that your chance of survival, the chance of recovering from an operation is better if those services are centralised. The evidence is there for that, to be fair to the executive.
Yes, well, I would agree to that because when I worked in the hospital, we used to talk about the 60-minute, 1-hour golden rule. That's the time between an incident occurs, be it someone has a stroke or a heart attack or a car accident, and they get the best kind of intervention at that time, whether that be a paramedic at the roadside or rushed into one of the specialised units in the different hospitals. But Stephen, for the last 30 years, there were waiting list initiatives in 1987 when I was at the Ulster Hospital in Dundonald. What I'm trying to say is that by running down our health service, they have increased waiting lists, which has put public pressure on to the Department of Health to then outsource a lot of that work. So, I mean, how much of the money that we pay as taxpayers is going to private hospitals, the private consultants and the agency staff in order to bring these waiting lists down? You're never going to clear waiting lists if you're firefighting and you're saying there's another 20 million, there's another 5,000 operations. Fantastic for the people who get them. Life-changing in many respects. But you're going to have this continue month after month, year after year, while you subsidise the private health service and don't reinvest in our own national health service.
Thank you very much indeed. Morning. Morning, Jim. Jim next. Morning, Jim.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for taking the call. Stephen, I've been following the whole thing around the health very closely in your show in recent days. And look, yes, whilst it's the job or within the remit of any minister, it's their responsibility to drive their particular department. Okay, so at the moment, Michelle O'Neill will come in for a lot of criticism. And if it's true that she didn't request the funds in the October...
She did not. Round, I can tell you she did not.
Well, you know what? Basically, given that the health service is at breaking point, we're told, I would have thought that we would have been crying out and scrimping for every penny we could get to throw at it. Now, the main point why I wanted to come on and talk to you, Stephen, is this. Michelle O'Neill will take and, yeah, she'll have to answer her own questions and face up their responsibility here. Now, but my point is, there's 100-odd plus...
Department of Finance, by the way, have pointed out in that statement I read out that the Department of Health has had 200 million more than last year. In June, monitoring, an additional 67 million was allocated to health, bringing the total spend to some 200 million more, 200 million above the previous year.
Yes. But here's my point, Stephen. Michelle O'Neill, yes, she's the health minister. But, and OK, you're confirming now that she didn't request funds in this October monitoring round. However, my point is, Stephen, there's 100-plus other MLAs up there on the Hill. And I'm thinking, does anybody actually talk to one another up there? Because are they leaving it for Michelle O'Neill to bring forward? Do they need to wait on Michelle O'Neill to bring forward this request for funds? Or are the 100-plus other MLAs up there not facing up to the responsibility that the health service is in crisis? Yes, it's not their department, but for crying out loud, I'm thinking, do they not want to get round the table? It doesn't matter what the...
Well, is that not what Sinn Féin and the DUP are essentially saying? Is that not what the government is saying? The executive, they're getting round the table, they've published a vision, they're getting on with it. If it's not popular, if it's not populist, they're getting on with it.
Stephen, yeah, I hear that. You know what? But that's just nowhere near them. Now, as I said to one of your backroom staff yesterday, I, like yourself, am privileged enough, I'm fortunate enough to have private health care. Okay, I'm in that position. Who I do feel for at the minute is the thousands, the hundreds of thousands of people who are on waiting lists for critical diseases and other things who have come onto your radio programme yesterday and this morning looking for some comfort that they're going to be seen sooner rather than later.
And they are being told there was no extra money for you in this monitoring round. That's what they're being told.
And it's absolutely pathetic, Stephen. Now, to be honest, I'm not on the... to put this in context, I'm a unionist voter, and I'm not necessarily on to defend Michelle O'Neill. But yes, she will come in for her own level of criticism. But my point is, there's 100 other plus MLAs up there in the Hill who seem to be shying away from the real elephant in the room here, Stephen. They're running around... I mean, transport's important, the arts is important, education's important, but what's the point in throwing money at those other departments if people are not living to benefit from them?
OK. But the whole system would grind a halt, wouldn't it? Like, that's easy to say, but you know, you can't get to a hospital if you don't have a car or a bus or whatever. You know, government have got to divide money between departments, Jim. They can't throw... You heard what they're saying. If they don't sort this long-term, the 90%... Of the block grant would it be spent in health after the next 10 years?
Stephen, you know
so
what?
That's their dilemma.
But here's the point, and I tried to phone into your show there about 2 weeks ago. You know what? This could be resolved pretty simply. If they all get rid of the red tape, and there's too much, you know, I heard a Sinn Féin councillor coming on to defend Michelle O'Neill yesterday because he was Sinn Féin. The time for that is past. I'm a unionist voter, but I'll still defend Michelle O'Neill to the point where she isn't the only one who has to answer questions here. But my whole point is...
I'll tell you. Here's another point that I would make. I just wonder if it could have been explained to us all, publicly explained to us all, slightly better. Insofar as when this vision was coming out from Michelle O'Neill of a 10-year plan, and obviously there are going to be then questions around, well, look, what are you doing short term? I just wonder if Michelle O'Neill should have turned around and said, well, look, I haven't asked for more money in this October monitoring round because. And the implications of that is this. I guess you could blame people like me for not asking the question when I come to think about it. Actually, maybe it's my fault. Sean and Enniskillen. Morning, Sean.
I think we've all been conned. We've been told that we have to face up to centralisation. It has happened. You have to face the facts. If you want heart surgery here, where do you get it? You don't get it in the Southwest Acute Hospital. You travel to the Royal. If you want paediatric heart services, you travel to the Royal, to Dublin, or Birmingham. If you want to access cancer services, Altmagellan or the Royal, you know, do you need to go on? We drive past our acute hospital here to access those services. The 15 million, the missing 15 million, if you look at it...
What missing 15 million?
The 40 million, 25 million was spent...
25 million was spent on waiting lists. The other 15 million went elsewhere in the health service.
Yes, where else did it go? It went to supporting private nursing homes. It went to supporting private domiciliary care services. So we've had privatisation, we've had centralisation. There's some other reason. Okay. And the other reason is the social structures within the whole country.
Okay. Well, look, what we're going to try to do, you know that we're on air Monday to Friday every day. What we're going to try to do is continue to try to get clarification around some of these issues. For example, if the Department of Health do get extra money in the January monitoring round, have they really got to spend that before the end of March? And how's the independent sector, which play a role in that, how quickly are they going to be able to tool up to get patients seen?
Stephen, who's been in control of the health service for this past number of years? The DUP. Their partner in government is now saying it's a disaster. It's a mess.
Well, Michelle O'Neill's saying the health service is at breaking point.
Yes, she's saying it's at breaking point. Sean, how did it get there?
Sean,
it's her partner in government that got it there.
Sean, thank you. Marie and Anna Cloy. Morning, Marie.
Good morning, Stephen.
Now, I need us all to be quick because we're 4 minutes away from the news.
Right, Stephen. I was referred for a procedure and I was asked, I'm 70 years of age, I was asked to travel to Ballykelly, which is Stroke City, to have the procedure done. I live 3 miles away from the Ryan Hospital in Downpatrick where the procedure could be done. To my knowledge, it's done on a couple of days a week there. My MLA wrote to the minister to ask her why I was asked to travel 80-odd miles when I could have it done 3 miles away from me. And her reply was that she referred it back to the South Eastern Health Service Trust. That it was not her remit, it was the remit of...
And how do you feel about that, Marie?
Well, it's how I feel about it. Well, I just feel that, you know, what annoyed me last night was that she said to you in your interview that she would use independent, what do you call it? If that is using independent, the private sector to treat people, to ask somebody to travel 80-odd miles to Derry when the thing can be done down Patrick.
Marie, thank you. Brian and Yuri. Morning, Brian.
Stephen.
Go ahead, Brian.
My thinking, they're trying to take it back to before 1948. People had to pay for all their medical treatment before 1948.
There's no indication whatsoever that that's what they're doing. In fact, what they're trying to do is to provide more services free at the point of delivery, Brian. That's what they're trying to do.
Yes. That's my... They're trying to put it back to that.
Okay. Bran, thank you. John in North Belfast. Morning, John.
Oh, Stephen. Stephen, I think it's a bit time to start to think the unthinkable. Is there any need for 5 major hospital sites in the Belfast area? What one would do? How much money would that save? And we roll that right across the province. There's too many hospitals for the population in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland's not unique. Wales, Scotland, England and Wales are all having the exact same problems. Their health hospitals are all in meltdown.